So when all that was going on, though, you were doing pretty good yourself, getting jobs.
Well, I was probably one of the lucky ones with a lot of them, you know, where we lived up there. When I lived up there and up to Skagit there, there was always something was coming up, you know, some kind of work. And I, when I got once acquainted around, you know, different guys, I'd get the work now and then for the Forest Service and stuff like that. And they was, well, when we'd fight fire, we'd get 35 cents an hour fighting fire. That's what we got. And I'd been on one job there. We logged the right of way off for this. It was a state job for a contract. And they couldn't pay, and the law was they couldn't pay less under $4 a day. Well, we was logging it off, and that was considered real good at that time, $4 a day.
In, 8 hours, 10 hours.
8 hours.
8 hours.
We worked 8 hours in seven. We worked 7 days a week, 7 days, Andy.
How long does those jobs last?
Well, I worked on that job for 6 months. So I completed the job. We logged that right away, and then they were building a road into this Mount Baker National Forest up the Cascade River.
So that was for 6 months, working 7 days a week.
Well, you came out of there pretty rich, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I got on there. There was only about 5 miles out of this little town where I lived, and they had a camp, but they couldn't. They needed more men, and they hired several. There was quite a few guys went to work, but we had to stay home. But some of the guys had cars, old Fords, and then we'd drive up to the job, you know, back and forth at night and in the morning and come home at night. And
Well, you want to go on from there? You got another question? Go ahead. Okay. So what'd you do after working in Washington?
Well, when I left, you know, I come up here then when I left, quit that country.
How'd you decide to leave?
Oh, just made up my mind to come to Alaska.
What had you been hearing about Alaska that made you want to come up here?
Oh, I knew, I met different guys at, Washington that been on the coast, fishermen and stuff like that, you know. I got acquainted with one guy. He was a doctor. He used to come up. He lived up there. He'd come up on a coast every year. He was a doctor in the canneries, and he just worked during the summer. And then he didn't want no more to do. He had a house out there. He'd just get away from it all, you know, and come up in the summer and work. And
what was his name? You know him?
I can't remember that guy's name now. I knew him well, too, but I think it was Hawkins or something like that, if I remember right now.
So what kind of things did he tell you that make you want to...
Oh, he was just telling me about, he said, jobs wasn't too easy then, you know, and them canneries are getting that, but he was a neighbor, and I got pretty well acquainted. Do things together, you know, and he had quite a bit of pull, you know, with the company he's working. I don't remember what cannery he was with, but he told me, he said, if you want to go up north, he said, I can get you a job, you know, but I come on my own, you know, when I come, me and my brothers come on my, we come on our own. I didn't.
Which brother is this that came to you?
Well, my brother Frank, he got killed up here, and but I didn't want to, I could have went, that guy with that fella, you know, he would have took me up, got me a job, but I didn't want to be obligated to anybody then, you know. I made a few dollars, we did, and hung on to it and had enough to get up here. And
well, what else did you hear about Alaska? Big wages or big...
Oh, no, I never was that. I was more or less interested in coming up here and trapping. That's what I was... I met a, there was another guy trapped. Well, Frank Beebe was his name. He was up in Alaska, trapped a few years. And then he come out to Washington and he trapped up there in the Cascades. And I knew him a little bit and he telling about the trapping, you know.
He told you it was better up here?
Well, yeah, and I wanted to come up anyway. I just wanted to see the country, you know, and I was more or less just interested in trapping and prospecting and that. Because I'd done a little prospecting up in Washington, too, you know, beat around. And
you ever find anything in Washington?
No, never found anything.
So had you heard a lot of gold stories before you came out and...
Oh, not, I, you heard a lot of stories, but, you know, I was a little bit different than most people, guys. I wasn't really gullible and believe everything I heard, you know.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of different rushes going on, too.
Yeah.
Like in the 20s, you must have heard about all the different gold rushes up here.
Well, see, there was no big stampedes or nothing. It was all made when I come here, you know what I mean. But these camps is still running pretty good, you know, like all the camps around the country. Fairbanks was a big camp, but then the dredges was in there, you know. There's about 8-10 dredges, I guess, working around there. There's quite a few men working around there when I come up there. And then this camp around here was a good camp. They're all a lot of people scattered around, you know, live and good and circle all over, you know. It's still doing lots of mining. There was no big wages, you know, $5 a day and $5-6, 10 hours. Some places is working you 12. And you had to work too. Hard work. There was no bulldozer them days when I come up here, and then they come in later, you know, a couple of years later, they start bringing the bulldozers in there.
So how'd you travel up here?
I come up by steamboat. I come up on SS Alaska. Took 7 days to Seward from Seattle. But they stopped, you know, and unloaded stuff all different places, you know.
Was that your first steamer ride?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was all right. The only place it was rough was in the Gulf, and there was an old bunch of fishermen and clam diggers and everything. They were going to Cordova, and they was all sick, seasick, and... Me and my brother, and there's about 3-4 of us, is the only one that wasn't sick. I don't know. It didn't seem to bother me. Him.
So would they have like a big room that everybody could stay in that ship? I mean, could you go down below and stuff?
Well, you could either come up steerage. We come up steerage. And they had first class, you know. That cost more money, you know, but we come up steerage. It wasn't bad. There's quite a few guys down there, all right, just bunks, you know. And I wouldn't say the food was the best, but you can make it.
That was part of the fare? Paying for your food was part of the fare?
You got your food was included with your fares. I believe it was either $42 or $45 from Seattle to Seward. I don't remember. Somewhere in the 40, 42 or 40, 45. I forget what it was.
What was it like on the boat? Like where you slept, you said there's like bunks and things like that in there?
Well, they had, you know, the beds one on top of the other. You had to have your own bedding. You had a mattress there, and yet you have to have your own bedding.
So what did you do for 7 days while everybody else is sick?
There was nothing. The only thing you could do, you could go in the mess, or guys played a little cards or something, you know, on their beds, or go in the mess hall after they cleaned the tables off, you know. You could go sit around there and play cards. You do whatever you wanted till mealtime.
What month was that?
April. April 1933.
Is that kind of cold, or was...
No, it was nice. But when we left Seattle, and there was quite a bit of snow when we hit Seward, quite a bit of snow. And then we went from Seward, we went to Anchorage and stayed around there a couple of months. Month or 6 weeks, I forget.
How'd you get to Anchorage?
Went on a railroad, on a train. There was a lot of snow in Anchorage at that time when we landed there. There was quite a bit of snow.
So what was Anchorage like those days?
Well, it wasn't a very big town, I can tell you that. We rented a cabin on 9th, and after we left 5th, it is all brush, your mind, just a few scattered shacks. And we rented this house from this guy. He lived downstairs and we lived upstairs. And it was all furnished, just our bedding. We had to have our own bedding, and we had to buy... We bought the coal off in him, and we paid $10 a month, three of us. As for the upstairs, there's a kitchen and...
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
Well, it was a good deal. You couldn't sleep under the bridge in there now for $10 a night.
So what are some of the places in Anchorage you would go to, places you remember, like stores or where you
went? Well, there was only two hangouts for all the fishermen and the trappers and the tie hackers and whatever was around there, you know. And it was the Panhandle. They called it the Panhandle. In the is either the Alaskan. Is either the Alaskan or Alaska Inn, or I forget what it was. They all hung around there. There's the only two places around there.
Is everybody looking for work those days?
Oh, there was a lot of guys looking for work. There's a lot of them were fishermen waiting for the fishing to open up, and then a lot of them was hanging around to go work on a railroad. And then there was two, three big mines out of there, Lucky Shot and the Independence, the coal, hard rock mines, and they employed quite a few guys. You know, they were coming back and forth, guys that quit and go out and work. And
were you looking for work then too?
Well, yeah, I was looking for something to do. I didn't have too much money, and trying to, there was nothing going on. It had a few dollars, enough to live, you know.
So how would you go about looking for work?
Well, right around there, the only thing is that come to town and some boss would come around looking for somebody, looking for men or something like that. It was the only way, or if there was a job, somebody'd wise you up to it, or, you knew, or... Of course, if you worked on a railroad, they'd go over to, they had an office there, you know. And
so what did you think of Alaska, you know, while you were in Anchorage at first?
Well, I kind of liked it. It didn't bother me because I was used to living in the western states, you know, bumming around that country. There was move around fighting fire and everything, and bunch of rough characters.
By that time you were about 20 and you sure knew a lot already, didn't
you? Oh yeah, I had a lot of experience. I was down to the ropes.
Did you ever meet some, you know, young kid who didn't really know the ropes and somebody's trying to take him?
Well, you've seen a lot of young kids that didn't know, you know, what the heck they were doing. Or...
Were there a lot of people like that in Alaska when you got
there? No, there was always a bunch of coming up, you know. There was a lot of them. There was a lot of people coming up there, come to Ferb. They heard about a lot of work up here, like in big wages, in which they was paying $5, $6 a day with big wages compared to in the States, you know. And And then there was a lot of them was real gullible, you know. They thought every creek in the country they'd go on was full of gold. All you needed was a pick and a shovel, you know, and believing that stuff, you know.
Scoop it up with it.
Yeah.
With
a teaspoon. There was a lot of them believe that, you know. I met a lot of them. Well, you meet them right now, you know, even, you know, they think that under every bush is a pot of gold, just about, behind every rock.
So what was the first job you got?
Well, the first time I went to work, we went to Fairbanks, and we couldn't get nothing there. We looked around there, so we walked. We walked from there to Circle City, and they didn't open the roads them days. They just let the snow melt out. And so we walked. And,
this is you and your brother?
Me and my brother, and we met a couple of guys on the road, and we took up together then. And the road commission had a lot of cabins along the road, you know, that they'd put crews there in the summer, you know, about every 10, 12 miles or something. And the mail carriers used them. They were hauling mail with dogs then from Circle to Chetnika. And we'd make one of them camps and stay around in there. We had a little grub, you know, and shoot a little game along the road and Tommy gun stuff like that. And till we got to right at the foot of Eagle Summit, and there was lots of caribou there, and then we had caribou meat to live on.
What kind of gun were you carrying?
I had a 30-40 Winchester, and my brother had a 30-30, and we had a 22 pistol and a 22 rifle.
So how long had you been in Alaska when that happened? When you walked?
Well, that was the first couple of 2-3 months I was here.
Well, what do you think you're going to find in Circle?
Well, see, there was a lot of mining going on there, and we thought we could get a job there, maybe working in the mines, but there was no chance. See.
No mining you could get into around Fairbanks?
Well, there was so many men. There was all, the town was full of men all coming up there, and guys that's been working the years before, you know, had their jobs on from the FE company, you know.
Well, were you getting worried about not having a job?
No. Time? I didn't worry about nothing. Them days didn't worry much about nothing. I knew we'd live somehow.
So were you able to just have a good time and
Yeah. Well, wasn't exactly broke yet, but getting pretty close to it. Was looking around, trying to make a few dollars. And
well, those days when there's a lot of guys coming up, especially I guess in the 30s, and you know, working in the mines and everything, were there many women around?
There wasn't the country wasn't there wasn't too many women around. Like around Fairbanks, there was a few, you know what I mean, around married women and stuff like that. But like these camps here, there's very few women around. There's a few married women, but damn few. I don't think when I first come around here, I don't think there was a half a dozen married women around here.
Half a dozen women and how many men?
Lots of men. I don't know how many. A
couple hundred?
Yeah, I'd say that.
Oh, boy. Well, when you go out, you know, like walking from Fairbanks to Circle, and you said there's all those cabins. So what would you have to carry with you?
Well, we had our bedroll, you know, of course, and whatever clothes you're going to have in your... with little grub, mostly hot cake flour and stuff like that, or bacon, you know, and some rice and something that was easy to pack. That was about the standard fare. Then depend on some coffee and tea, of course, and salt and a little sugar.
So about how many pounds did you used to carry that on your back? That's
all backpacked.
About how many pounds?
Oh, I don't imagine we had over 50 pounds apiece or something like that with our bedding and all that ammunition and I probably had, I remember, more ammunition than anything else.
What kind of a pack did you have?
Pack boards, Trapper Nelsons.
Uh-huh. You just tie a bag on it?
Yeah, just pack them up. Had a sack on them, you know, and put your stuff in there and then put your bedroll on top, you know, strapped it down. Uh-huh. Oh, that was it was in the spring of the year, weather was nice, and nice trip. We got to Circle just as the river broke up, the Yukon River.
What was that like for you to see?
Well, that was quite a breakup, you know, lots of ice and...
Make a lot of noise?
No, I wouldn't say, me and one of these guys, a fella from Minnesota, we went to work for the marshal's wife in a couple of days, and she gave us a poling boat then, and we patched it up. So then we floated down to Rampart, stopped there, and then we went work in a mine there.
So you floated through the flats?
Yeah.
How did you like that? You figure you might get lost anytime?
No, we didn't worry about that much. We stopped in Fort Yukon and Beaver and then even Village and went down. There was lots of ducks and geese. You couldn't go hungry there. Oh, yeah, the flats are just full of them at that time.
Yeah, that's pretty good living there.
Yeah.
Was that poling boat your pay?
Or was
it an extra?
It was a good boat, you know.
Was that like what you got for the work you did?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. She gave us that. She hired us to go to work. She needed some work done. I forget what we done around there for, but anyway, she had that boat there, and she was leaving. Her name was McLean. Her husband was the marshal, deputy marshal there, and he died that winter, and she was pulling out and moving out of there, and. So we asked her if she wanted to sell the boat, and she said, yeah, she said, anything I got here, I'm going to sell. And then we done this work, and she said, I'll give you the boat for the work. Is that all right? And it's all right with us. It was a pretty good deal, you know. The boat was worth it, and she had no use for the boat.
What was Circle like? What did it look like?
There wasn't much in there then. There wasn't much. There was several native families around there. There was one freighter there, Rasmussen was his name, and a guy by the name of Alexander was an NC agent. And
well, Circle used to be a really big place, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, there. There was more natives than whites around there, and we were there, but there was a lot of mining out of there, you know, around Deadwood Creek and then through out of Circle, you know, but Circle was their headquarters, I guess, around Miller House and through there, you know, Macedon Creek and all through there, Porcupine Creek, and then there was a lot of trappers, you know, in them days. There's all them towns are full of trappers, you know. Circle and Fort Yukon, and
so you went down river. First place you stopped, Fort Yukon.
Yeah.
And what was Fort Yukon like?
Well, there was a lot of people around there. Lots of people, natives and whites too. But they were all trappers. There was and there was three stores there, NC store and Jimmy Carroll and Carter had a store.
Jimmy Carroll, do you remember anything about him?
Well, he was an old trapper before he went in the trading business. Yeah, I remember him. I was later with one of his kids in the Army. He was in the Army here at Ladd Field and then in the dog kennels, and we used to stay over there. When we'd come up, we used to put our dogs in there, got acquainted with him.
So then Stevens, Or no, what's the next place?
Stephen Village?
Or Beaver's the next place.
Huh? Well, Beaver, yeah. Fort Yukon and Beaver and then Stephen Village.
So when you got down to Beaver, how long you stayed there? Just a day?
We stayed there 3 or 4 days around there.
Uh-huh.
Jap had the star there, Frank Yasuti. And he had a cabin back at the star while all the trances used to kind of stay there and trappers coming in. And he let us stay there for, sit stay there as long as you want to rest up. And
mm-hmm. Do you go past that place they call Purgatory?
Yeah, we stopped there too.
You meet those guys?
Yeah, they, both of them were alive then, the Yermit brothers.
What was that place like?
Well, there was just that one cabin, and the brothers had this, and then it was quite a attraction, you know. They had all these curios and that in there, and he carved all this stuff, and they had to. He had a big devil carved out. He had it on a bank, and standing there, and he'd come through, and he'd be off in a brush or this cabin, I don't know, and he had a wire hooked up to his arm, and he'd be waving you in, you know, coming to look, you know, where we knew about it. Is Frank Yasuti though, was the boy. He said, when you get to Purgatory, he's telling us about it, you know.
So those guys would spend their time watching for boats to come down.
Yeah, well, all the big boats would stop in there too, the tourists, you know. The Yukon was running a tourist steamer Yukon from Dawson to Nenana, and they had a schedule, and they hauled the mail also, and they'd stop in there, and they'd stop all these towns, you know, let the tourists for a little while. And of course, he was hauling freight too. And
that guy make a lot of moonshine back there?
Well, this prohibition, that's all there was, is moonshine, moonshine and homebrew.
With those guys in Purgatory, they make a lot of it?
No, they never. I don't think they never. No, I don't think they was making any. I don't think they even drank, them guys, to be honest about it. Huh. I met them later down in Rampart. And
so, well, were people pretty friendly those days?
Yeah, they were. They were really friendly, you know. They'd like along the river, a lot of people was living along the river, you know, trappers, and they're glad to see you, you know. Yeah, they were pretty friendly.
How about when you got down to Stevens?
Well, when we got to Stevens Village, we just stopped there. And there was a guy in there, a trader from Tanano. I had a boat, and he was had it full of groceries, and he was trading with the natives for muskrats, you know. And muskrats are cheap, then, 2 bits apiece. And we stopped in there. We wanted to buy. We bought some shortening off in this guy and something else, that was all. And then we kept on going. We didn't stay there.
You know what his name was?
Ed Farrell. He was Eddie Farrell. He just died here a few years ago. I got to know him pretty well after that, you know, for years then around there.
So then you and Frank got down to Rampart?
After? Well, the four of us, he was in there. The other two guys we picked up. And, yeah. Then we went, we got a lay off in some ground from this old colored guy, Lee Gene Swanson. And we worked this underground there all summer. But we didn't make anything. There wasn't much there. And we got done that fall between me and my brother. We had, let's see, we had $80 for all summer, the two of us.
Did those other two guys stay with you?
They stayed, they was there all summer with us. And then the one, he went out, left that fall, he went to Fairbanks. And the other guy, this Leo Elg from Minnesota, he went up where we were trap, and we went up on Troubles, and we done a little trap, and there wasn't much fur, and we prospected, and he built a cabin about 3 miles from where we did, where we had one, and he prospected that winter. Then we went from there, when we left there, me and my brother, we went alive and good. We walked alive and good then.
From Rampart.
Yeah.
Who was the fourth guy? What was his name?
What?
There was you and Frank and Leo.
And a guy by the name of Tom Donahue. Huh.
So then you got to Live and Good. Well, first, what was Rampart like?
Well, we hung around there. That summer, we worked around there. There's
a lot of cabins there?
Well, there's quite a few people around there. They're working around there, you know, mines and lots of fish and most of the guys, a lot of them were trappers, you know, like these Evanses and Woodses and all them. They were Mayos and they all trapped in the winter, of course, and they worked in the summer and in the mines and fished and cut steamboat wood, whatever, you know, there's come up.
You hear those names a lot, you know, Evans and Mayo. And
well, they're all old families, you know, and their fathers is around there. It's when Rampart was hit, you know, the old timers.
Well, Mayo, wasn't he one of the first guys that was running a store and prospecting around Mokotan out here?
Well, I guess he was here in the 80s, you know, old Cap Mayo, the grandfather, father of these guys, older Mayos. Huh. Yeah, he's here a long time ago.
So then you walked that road down. Was that road, was that kept open pretty good? The road from Rampart to Live and Good?
No, there was no road then, just dog trail. We just went cross country, you know, trapping trails, and there was no roads.
That came up through Minook?
No, we didn't go that way at all. We went up Hunter Creek and hit the Troublesome, and then from the Troublesome, we went up to Quail Creek, and from Quail Creek, we went over to the another creek called Gasm Creek, then dropped into Goose Creek. And then followed Goose Creek to the West Fork, and then all the way to where, well, practically to where McConnell's store is now, and then we went into Live and Good.
Well, how did you know to follow that route?
Well, asked a few old timers that was in their trappers, and then I had a map too, you know.
There many people along that route?
Well, Red Anderson was mining there on Quail Creek, him and Ivor Olson and Bill Broman, and Red been over the trail, and he told us years ago a little bit about the trail. And
so what time of year was that you were walking?
That was in March, and we walked through there. We hung around the West Fork there. We done a little trapping, you know, and but there wasn't much fur that winter. There was nothing, you know. There was no rabbits or nothing around. There wasn't much fur. Mm. But there's a lot of caribou, a lot of game, a lot of caribou and stuff like that. Ptarmigan.
So were you planning to go to Live and Good, or were you just walking until you...
Oh, yeah. I figured it was going to go there and see what it looked like. And went to Live and Good. And then when we got to Live and Good... That's when they were building that road from Fairbanks to Live and Good, but they were just started on it. So we got a job working on a right of way, slashing the right of way. Worked there a while. That's for the road commission. We got $4 a day there for 8 hours, and I'm bored, of course.
Well, did you say there's a mine going there in Live and Good? Is there one big mine going?
There was quite a few mines going there. They were doing a lot of underground work. They're drift mining. There was quite a few guys. They worked winter and summer in a drift. And, you know, they'd hoist it up in the winter and then sluice their dump in the summer. And then they'd keep working even in the summer, you know, underground. And then, of course, when the water start running, there's a lot of little creeks that they were working on, like Olive and Lillian and Amy and Root Creek and
Wilbur. How did those creeks get their names?
Well, I don't know.
Like, sounds like named after somebody's mother or maybe their girlfriend or something like that.
I guess there's after the gals that used to make the camps. I don't know.
Are there a couple ladies used to travel around behind the mining camp? Well, that's how most of the streets in Fairbanks got their names.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, every now and then we hear different stories about some of the ladies who would be in the mining camps. I guess some of them are pretty tough.
Yeah.
Well, were there very many, what do they call them, camp followers, or what do they call them?
Well, I guess you could. From one place to another.
Did you ever meet any of these ladies?
Well, they were all over the country. They were here, back and forth, you know, and lying and going all over every place you went.
You ever get to know them, talk to them all?
Well, they'd be around here. They're same as anybody else, you know.
Any wild kind of ladies, or are they just sort of pretty normal?
No, they was in, like, all these stories. You hear a lot of these stories, you know. I suppose there was a lot of characters amongst them, too, you know.
Well, you hear about them robbing people, too, you know, especially robbing gold and things like that.
Well, they've had a dim day, same as anything else, you know. There was, everybody was an innocent them days, you know. There was crooks just as well as there is now. Always was, you know.
Well, when you're in Rampart, is Rampart mostly white people living there then?
No, there was more. It was more natives there than whites. There was quite a few white guys around there, though. But there was lots of. Yeah, there's way more.
Mm-hmm. They get along pretty good then?
Oh, yeah, everybody got along. As you could figure in a small camp, you know.
Well, up to that time, you know, you'd covered quite a bit of country. And you hear stories about all kinds of characters in Alaska. Are there any that you remember, like your first year, that really stick in your mind? Some of the people you met?
Well, there was a lot of old-timers, you know what I mean, guys that was around. There was a lot of them wasn't too old yet, you know, that come up in 98, you know, from the big rush from to Dawson, you know, and then, of course, they spread out after that was over, was all around the camps, you know. There was quite a few of them. They were all over, you know. They were still young guys. It wasn't too old of guys, you know. They were still mining and prospecting yet. And every camp you'd go, there'd be a bunch of around this camp, had a bunch of them, Rampart, any place you went, you know. There's most of them kind of start settling down, you know. All the big stampedes are over and they were got down on, had some crooks of their own, they were working or doing something.
Did Alaska seem a lot different to you than where you had been before? Like, different than Washington?
Well, no, I wouldn't say. Pretty much, I done pretty much up here like I done out there, you know, the same. Yeah, it wasn't, you might say pretty much the same class of people, you know. When
were you thinking then that you're going to stay in Alaska?
Well, I was moved, you know. I didn't know just how long I was going to stay or what, but I liked it, you know. I liked it from the time I come up, and I figured I'd stay. Stick it out. I never regretted nothing. I always, you know, done good here or anything. I never got, had nothing to worry about, you know. Done whatever I wanted and worked whenever I wanted, and I trapped all the time. I liked the trap and I liked the prospect. I got lots of that.
Pretty good life.
Yeah, I had a pretty good life. I can't, it was all good for me. I enjoyed all of it. Independent you could be, or, you know, if you wanted, you didn't have to work for anybody, you work for yourself, all is something you could do.
You ever get bored?
Nah, I never, nothing like that. I never bothered me. I go out in the woods and stay out there by myself all winter. It never bothered me.
Well, then, from Live and Good, how long were you there? And what year is this that we're in Live and Good now?
I went there in 1934, the first time I... Then I hung around there, I was around there on and off for years, then I trapped out of there. I used to hang around, come around here, but I'd go back, trap on a West Fork, and then I trapped on Hess River there after I got out of the Army for about 8 years. I used to go to Live and Good, then I'd go to hit the South Fork of Hess and hit the main. I used to trap up in them hills.
Many other trappers around there then?
Well, there was a lot of trappers around there. Yeah, there was scattered all around there.
But you guys didn't have any problems going on?
No. Trappers are different than they didn't move in. Huh? You had a line, the guys stayed away from you. It's just like nowadays, all these birds running around, the snow goes, you know, they don't respect nobody's line or go any place.
Mostly on snowshoes or dog
teams? Well, I use dogs all the time after I was here. Well, that you have just about have to have dogs to get your stuff out, you know, and especially when you got back quite a ways, you know, and haul your supplies out, then use them for trapping, of course.
Well, where'd you get your first dog team from?
Oh, when I was first in Rampart that winter, was there a fella was going outside and. He let me use a couple of dogs. He wanted somebody to take care of him, and then a guy gave me a couple of dogs, and they was old dogs, you know, but they was all right. They'd work, you know. Then when I come down here, I got some dogs from another fella and raised my own, and
how many dogs you like to have on a team?
Well, at one time, me and my brother, we had, between the two of us, we had quite a few, 10, 11, something like that. And that's too much, too hard to feed.
How are you getting your food for your dogs?
Well, your game, you'd catch and stuff like that, you'd cook that up in cornmeal, and then, of course, you'd get fish wherever you could get fish, and rabbits, and scraps, whatever you can get a hold of.
How did dogs do those days? Did sometimes pretty lean times for them? Or?
Well, I always had fair-sized dogs, you know, because it wasn't racing or nothing. You know, you had work dogs, you know, something that could pull something. Like in the spring of the year, you know, and that they're easy to feed. You had lots of beaver, you know, all this trapping beaver, you know, get beaver meat for them. And when there's lots of link around, they like link too, you know, that's good dog feed.
How big would your dogs be? How many pounds?
Oh, I'd say 65, 70 pounds, something like somewhere in there. They were good travelers, just big enough they could travel good too, you know, and get to the snow pretty good. Wasn't too big and wasn't too small. I didn't want too small of dogs. I didn't want to. It takes too many to pull anything. And they eat just as much as a big dog.
Yeah. What kind of sled do you have?
I always had a basket sled. Big 10, 12, 11 footer somewhere in there, you know, so you could haul stuff. Like one something like that out there, you know.
Where would you get your sled from?
Oh, I'd make them or buy them from the, we could buy them from the natives. You'd make them at that time. You could buy a 10, 11 foot basket sled for $25. Good one too. I've made my own too.
Did somebody teach you how to make them?
Oh, no, I just looked at them and there ain't much to make in one of them, you know. Just get some good birch.
You pick your birch out?
Oh, yeah. You got to run around and get one of some good straight grain, you know, so it'll bend good. And
how do you know if it's a good birch?
Well, you can tell by chopping into it, you know. Look at the grain, you can tell.
How big a tree you get?
Well, not 4, 5, 6 inches, 8 inches, somewhere in there. You don't let go too big. You don't have to. You can go bigger if you want to, you know, rip them out.
And how do you get your boards out of that birch?
Well, just take a rip saw and rip it out. Or either if you get a good straight grain one, you can split it, you know. It'll split good.